I'm used to my appearance provoking the full spectrum of facial reactions everywhere I show up, and you absolutely did not let me down. You were delighted, weren't you? You gave me some wonderful face when I came up here. You looked at me like your mother-in-law just cancelled dinner. I've been lucky enough to travel, and I'll never forget my first trip to Australia. I went to a place called Perth. I got off the plane. First person that saw me said the following.
Hey, mate! Hey, mate! Why is Freddie Mercury wearing a kimono?
Huh. Hey, mate, why is Freddie Mercury wearing a kimono? Now, this man opened the interaction with the words, hey, mate. Our eyes met, right? I was the mate. Case closed. Then he said, why is Freddie Mercury wearing a kimono? I looked around, there was nobody else there. I was persons one and two in the rhetorical question. I've never met this man, and already, grammatically, I'm on the back foot. I wasn't gonna put up with that. You would have been proud of me. You can't show any weakness. I summoned up every ounce of testosterone in my body, and I fired it ocularly at this chap. And I said, I think you'll find that this is a smoking jacket. Yeah, I showed the bugger. There's a lot that's not made sense, though. And one of the things that I still struggle with to this day is how uptight us Brits are. I didn't realise in the UK, how are you is a rhetorical question. How are you? Is a rhetorical question. If somebody from the UK asks you how you are and you tell them, they would be mortified. Now, there are geographical anomalies, I'm delighted to say. If you ask somebody from Liverpool how they are, they will tell you. 10 times out of 10, and I love them for that. Now, from personal experience, they oscillate wildly between two very distinctively different states. The first one is thus. How am I? I'm sound, mate. I'm buzzing. I'm having a belter. Do you know what? Wake sound. Aaron Dawes is sound. Even our Anthony's being sound. Look at the weather, lad. Cracking the flags. I love you, cadet. Apologies for the accent, by the way. I have the ability to blend in seamlessly with my environment wherever I go. I feel an energy, I match it, we become almost indistinguishable. Silly. Now, that's the first state. Now, the second state of Scouse being is rather different, and it is as follows. I'm fuming, lad.
Don't you start, lad. I am fuming here, mate. I'm fuming. I am fuming. I'm up to all the week. I've seen me arse with my dad. Everton are being shite again. You're doing my fucking head in. I am fumigating naked.
Oh, we have a great show for you tonight. We have a fantastic show. Very funny comedians. I know funny. I do very funny. People always ask me who I think is funny. That's the number two question I get asked as a comedian. The number one question I get asked as a comedian is, have you ever died? As soon as you tell someone you're a comedian, first thing they want to know, oh, have you ever died? Oh, what's it like when no one laughs? Oh, tell us about the worst gig you've ever had in your life. Please, relive for me, in minute detail, the worst moment of your professional career. Have you ever really died? It's like saying to a doctor, tell us about the last patient you lost. What happened? With the family crying. I bet they were they? Yeah, yeah. People are such ghouls. It's the number one question, have you ever died? Number two question, though, is what makes you laugh? People always want to know that from me. Who do you think is funny? And that's a nicer question. That's more understandable. You know, I make people laugh. People want to know what makes me laugh. In the same way as you might say to your hairdresser, who cuts your hair? Or you might say to someone in an Audi, who do you think drives like a cock? I like that joke. It's a short joke. It's a sharp joke. And also with that joke, I get to spot every Audi driver in the room. I can just see a pinched expression on your face there. All right, no need to be like that about it. I've done well for myself. It's a very reliable machine. And the fact that I can tell you're an Audi driver by the expression on your face means technically you've just given a form of indication. So well done. Good for you. We knew you could do it. Yeah. Have you ever died? Who do you think is funny? You always get asked the same questions. That's what I don't like doing interviews. I love doing this job. This is great. I love standing here talking to you, though. But doing interviews, it's a necessary evil. It's part of the job. Oh, having to answer questions. And I don't even like watching interviews. You'd rather watch a comedian tell jokes than talk about how they wrote them. You'd rather watch a singer sing songs than talk about their inspiration. You'd rather watch a sports person do their sport. You'd certainly rather watch a sports person do their sport. Come on now. Sports interviews can be turgid affairs at best. And then I hit it with my foot. You mean you kicked it? If you like. They're really interesting. They're really, and I'm not slagging sports people. It takes a great deal of single-mindedness to excel at a sport to a point where people want to interview you about it. But sports people are famous because they're good at sport, not because they're good at talking about sport. That's why you find a sports person who is good at talking about sport, the BBC will cream their knickers over them. We found a woman. She used to ride horses. That's a sport. And she's quite lively and engaging and charismatic. Put her on absolutely everything! Do not let her out of your sight! Even people I'm a fan of. Andy Murray. I love Andy Murray. Britain should be very proud of Andy Murray. He's done a lot to be proud of. He's won Wimbledon. He's an Olympic gold medalist. And he put up with a lot of shit when he was named, what, eighth best in the world? Oh, you bloody loser, you. Done a lot to be proud of. He's won Wimbledon, he's Olympic gold medals, he's magnanimous in victory, he's humble in defeat. He's a big comedy fan. He's been to see me live, I've met him, lovely bloke. But Jesus Christ. I have not listened to him drone on one more time about how he won, stroke lost another tennis match. I can't do it.
So then I hit it to him, and he hit it back to me, and I'm very good at tennis, but he is also very good at tennis. Some days I'm better at tennis than he is, but I think what's happened today was he was slightly better at tennis than I am, and that's maybe why he won the game of the tennis.
Oh, for God's sake, man! I'm not very sporty, you can probably tell. I like hill walking. Doesn't really count as a sport. I like hill walking and camping. Proper camping, though. None of your glamping bullshit. Glamping. Derivation of the words glamorous and camping. Where you stay in a yurt, which is more expensive than a hotel. What is wrong with you? A lot of people don't realise yurt is a derivation of the words yura and twat. A lot of people don't realise that.
We need to bring back a sense of consequences for our actions. In this world, there are no more consequences for actions, yeah? And what I'm talking about, if there's no consequences in this life, what we need to do is bring back to Britain a simple sense of hell. The idea, if we screw up in this life, right, we will burn in sulphur for all eternity in the next life. Now, this is quite a tough sell, right? You don't like that idea, do you? Right, but hear me out. This is a good idea. We got any Christians present? I need your assistance. Any Christian people here this evening? Yeah, yeah. In the pink shirt. What's your name, son?
Josh.
Fantastic. You a Christian? So you understand the idea of redemption, eternity, yeah? Resurrection, eternity in particular. And I do too. I understand the notion of eternity because I went to church on Sunday. Let me tell you this. That service went on forever. If it took me an hour to open a bottle of wine, I'd be drummed out of business. Now, the point is this. How long does it take to own a packet of crisps? Get on with it. Now, we need to bring back... So now, the problem with the idea of hell is no one's frightened of it. Now, I'm going to describe hell for you now, and none of you are going to bat an eyelid, right? And while your body's boiling in mouldering in the grave, we'll take your soul and boil it in boiling oil for 1,000 millennium. Then after that, 2 sulphurous demons, emissaries of Satan himself, will come along, pull out your kidneys and set fire to them on the red-hot coals of hell itself. Then after this, another demon will come along, pull out your eyeballs, stick them on a red-hot poker, burn them on the hot coals of hell, and stick them up your arsehole, and they'll come out of your own mouth with your shit on it. And this will go on forever. So you're not bothered by that, are you? In fact, most of you are laughing at it, huh? In fact, most of us, being British, are thinking, well, come on then! Call yourself the devil! And that's the interesting thing about hell, isn't it? When you describe it, when someone describes hell, it tells you everything you need to know about that person, right? And what he's like and what his people are like. And I describe hell then in a normal British accent, which tells you that we, the British, are stoic, tough people who could take absolutely bloody anything. And that's the interesting thing about hell. It tells you about the people telling you about it. Hell, in a French accent, for instance, sounds like a recipe. And while the body is lying down on the worms inside the flesh, we take out the soul and place it in very hot oil for a long time. Then, once it is tender, two demons come together at once, remove the kidneys and place them on the hot coals with a little white wine vinegar, some sea salt, and some rosemary, and cook them till they're brown on the outside, but still pink in the middle. Then after this, we take the eyeballs, place them on the hot coals, cook them till they're crunchy on the outside, runny in the middle, on the hot poker, stick them up the arse, they come out the mouth with the shit on. It is delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Okay, you see? Perverts! Perverts, basically, yeah? Hell.
Hell in a Dutch accent sounds like a pretty good stag do, doesn't it? Hey, and while your body is lying down, we'll take you to the hottest place you can imagine. Imagine the hottest place you can go, yeah? Now go even hotter, and two demons will come together and rub oil all over your body. Two demons together. Two demons together at once, and then you will take out your kidneys. Oh, your hot kidneys. And place the kidneys in a hot place and cook the kidneys till they're hard, until your kidneys are hard, and then take out your eyeballs and stick them in your bum hole. And this will cost you 45 euros.
Hey, are we ready? Sounds like an agreeable weekend.
I just don't know how to relax. A friend of mine, when he wants to relax, he listens to Whale Song. You know those tapes of whales singing? They go, ah. I think, firstly, they're not singing, are they? No, they're faxing. Really long fax. Like the one I asked my brother to send me. That time I ran out of toilet paper. Shops were shut. But also, they can't be relaxed. They've got to be the least relaxed animals on the planet, whales, haven't they? For starters, they're endangered. Is that relaxing? There's only 10 of you left. Fine! As long as I'm one of them. If I'm feeling a bit horny, I'll sellotape a couple of dolphins together. But not only are they endangered, they're the biggest animals on the planet, whales, aren't they? They're enormous. Me doing that doesn't really get across how big they are. They're massive. But they eat the smallest, don't they? Plankton and krill, tiny little creatures like that. Imagine, you're a great big animal. You're starving hungry. You never get a good bite of anything. Never get a good, oh, that was bloody lovely, that was. No, just all day long, shoving tiny bits of food in the side of your mouth. Oh, I'm sick of these stupid little things. I like to think of it as Jeff Capes living on hundreds and thousands. He'd be furious, wouldn't he? I'm starving! And he'd be wandering around looking for whatever the individual of hundreds and thousands is. I don't know what you call them when you've only got one. You wouldn't call it a hundreds and thousand, would you? That's far too long a word for something that insignificant. Maybe they call it a one. And then maybe you've got two of them. You've got two ones. That's confusing, isn't it? Because they can't have always had hundreds and thousands of them. Surely in the early days, when they first started making them, they must have made a few, see what they were like. I mean, that's not good business sense, is it? You've got a new product, you don't just make hundreds of thousands! We're gonna be rich! Oh, you make a few more. I don't know. It's a mystery. In America, they don't call them hundreds and thousands, actually. They don't call them that. They call them sprinkles. And unfortunately, I found that out at a gig. And that was a tough night. I don't know. Yeah. There's a guy in the front row going, hundreds and thousands, what? Hundreds of thousands, what? I said, no, it's not hundreds and thousands of anything. They're called that. It's a cake decoration. He said, we don't call them that. We call them sprinkles. So I said, all right. I said, all right. It's like Jeff Capes, right? Living on sprinkles. I thought I'd get it a second time. He said, who the hell's Jeff Capes? I said, he's a massive bloke. I said, strongest man in the world, 3 years running. Loves his grub. He said, we don't call him that. We call him Luther Vandross. So I said, all right, it's like Luther Vandross living on sprinkles. But by that point, they'd forgotten about the whales. Why the hell would Luther Vandross eat sprinkles? He's a millionaire. He could have steak every day. Are you saying he's too dumb to go and find his own food? He's got to go around eating little bits of cakes? Are you racist, buddy? Is that your problem? So I just did a couple of knob gags and got off.
I know a lot of you are now looking at me going, shit, look at his hair. Now. Now. I am in the mid-stage of growing an afro. I'm well aware that this is the shit stage. For some reason, this alone gives people license to shout out shit to me in the street. So for your information, I know what year it is. I have never been near a car wash. And who the fuck is Shaft? I walk down the road, Shaft, Shaft! I look down, my cock is hanging out. Oh yes, ladies. Some stereotypes I can live with. Big cock. Very happy to be here. Look around the room. So many sinners sitting here amongst us tonight. Oh, yes, there are. There's a man sitting right in my eye line, sitting right over there. Look at him. Openly, openly wearing glasses. Have you found Jesus? The Lord gave you vision at a limited rate. You defy him by wanting to see more. Who do you think you are? Remove your glasses. See what is really here. Oh, look at this pretty lady. Don't fight it. I can tell by your eyes that you want me. Oh, fuck it. I can't keep it up. So enjoy. I've never left the country. Good evening, folks. Very, very, very pleased to be here tonight. I want to tell you a bit about myself, because I've started off quite aggressive, so I'll pull back, right? My parents arrived in London in the 60s. And London in the 60s was very, very similar to Australia now. No real diversity, right? I remember my first day at primary school, I ran into the classroom, I ran straight back home, and I went, Mom, Mom, apparently there's a black boy in my class. I can't find him anywhere. So you young people, you're very, very lucky, right? Young people, how old are you, son? Right there, you. 16? What year were you born?
1991.
Did you hear that noise? That's called jealousy. There are people in this room with underpants and socks older than you. Where are you from, child? Where are you from?
London.
London, big place, scale it down. I'm not driving a minicab. Work together. Kilburn, North London, yeah. South London, representing.
People ask me all the time, so Rich, how did you end up becoming a comedian? And I always say, why do you say end up? Like I made a mistake. It's kind of a polite conversation you have with a tramp. So, fella, how'd you end up in a skip? It's the most fantastic job in the world, right? Make people laugh, you fella, with all that stress on your face. Look at you, sitting in the front row trying to get the jokes before anyone else. How desperate are you for comedy, my friend? Well, you people pricks put... Oh, I'm sorry, what? I wasn't expecting a response. Do you work?
I'm a student.
A student, all right. No more questions, Your Honor. It's very easy, no heavy lifting, eh? Why don't you think about being a comedian? What are you studying?
History.
That goes back a long time, doesn't it? Why don't you try American history? A couple hundred years. Boom, you're done. Listen, Here's the thing, all right? You just say intelligent things stupidly. That's all there is to being a comedian. Or maybe it's stupid things intelligently. It's not rocket surgery. I'll tell you that right now. That's what I get asked all the time. So I bet you were the class clown. Were you the class clown? Screw you. Why would you suggest I took a childhood disorder and turned it into a career, you prick? No one ever says to a hooker, were you the class whore? I bet you were the class whore, weren't you? Let the mystery be. I love watching Brits snap. That is the greatest thing in the world. When a Brit snaps, you don't even know they've snapped. It's not like Americans who take out 8 or 9 people with a high-powered rifle because they're social animals. Brits snap and you go, 2 hours later, thinking, I think that guy snapped while I was talking to him. At that point where he crushed the pint glass with his hand, he was a bit pissed off. That's why when it comes to a war on terror, something we invented, the war on terror, because Brits would never have a war on terrify, because what's not terrifying to Brits? Everything. They just don't show it, right? Brit, you've had giants plucking your daughters out of villages a couple thousand years ago. Look that one up, history boy. It's true. So the basic British reaction to anything terrifying is this. How much is this going to cost? You can't really terrify. That's why I'm pretty sure the war, the whole terrorism thing, I think the terrorists have just kind of given up on Britain, because what can they possibly do, right? Listen, I would never compare the scopes of tragedy of, say, the World Trade Center to the bombs that blew up in London, but the reaction is completely different, right? America still has this entire culture of fear about terrorism. It's basically manifests itself by terror alerts being scrolled across the bottom of the TV screen by color. No explanation whatsoever. Just today's terror alert is orange. Now back to our show. What was that? What does that mean? Orange, that's hunting accidents, roadworks, right? That's not good. It means be very, very aware of terror. So dwell on it now and then. Whereas in Britain, they blow up the buses in London, next day people are back at the bus stop waiting for the bus, right? And complaining about it, because they're Brits. Bus is late. I mean, it's late. The one yesterday blew up. Yeah, well, that was yesterday. Today's today. I live in the present, and the bus is late. That's why when you watch a Brit snap, right, you got to get really close to them. They'll pick a high street and just corkscrew for a while. Not even knowing what direction to what direction is corkscrew anyway? This is bullshit. And then you get too close, and then you get sucked into the vortex, right? Are you okay? That moment when a Brit truly snaps, and it looks like this. I'm going to write a letter. That's it. I've been pushed to the brink, you bastard. Nobody treats me like this, you son of a bitch. Huh? I'm not emailing this, I'm writing this. Wait till you get that tomorrow. Big red pillar box right in the mail. Postal strike.